Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Anne, who is here to speak with us this afternoon about, I suppose we could say, the gifts of practice. Welcome, Anne.
Hey, Jen, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am fantastic.
Excellent. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. And I was thinking that's kind of a good way to intro our topic, but it really is the gifts of practice. For the holiday season that I think probably not everyone knows that Keep It Simple is its own organization that carries the books and recordings and that sort of thing of Sherry, and that a number of people over the years have given gifts from Keep It Simple to their friends and loved ones. So we thought it would be fun to talk with someone who has done that for many, many years, and I'm guessing given any number of gifts.
I've done it a lot, but I've had, it was so fun to get invited to talk about this because it just brought back so many amazing memories of my experience with giving people this gift. I'll just tell you one. When my nephew was expecting his first baby, I thought, well, what gift do I want to give him? And I gave him Time Out for Parents. And I went to a baby shower for his second baby, and he came up to me, and this is not characteristic of him at all. He came up to me and he said, "You know, Anne, I just want to tell you how much that book has meant to my wife and me. It's so helpful," and it just so touched me, you know. So for anybody out there who knows anybody who's going to have a baby, that's a great book to give them as a shower present or a baby present.
Gosh, it really, really is, isn't it? I never thought of that, actually. thank you. That's my first idea for tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe even if you know people who have children, maybe you missed the birth and it's now 10 years later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe the teenagers. Well, you know what? You know what's funny, Anne, that I didn't even, to tell you the truth, it's funny. I hadn't made this connection until we're having this conversation, but I'm actually going to see some family members, and some of my nieces or nephews are hitting that teenage years, and they're just, they're lovely. They're all amazing people, at least in my eyes. but I so want to give them, There's Nothing Wrong With You for Teens, but that's that's this big topic, and it's a funny title, and, you know, all those sorts of things. So it dropped in that I have some copies that I'm going to take, and I'm just going to say, hey, would you guys do me a big favor? I'm just curious to see if you would read this for me, and just, let's just talk about it. I'm curious to see if you kind of see, you know, if it's interesting to you. And I just love that framing because I know they'll say yes because, you know, we have a good relationship, and they'll just think that's a fun thing. And so sort of instead of, no, I think you should mind to read this, you know.
That's great, Jen, because I have two teen nieces. Well, one just left the teens, but if your nieces are anything like mine, it's like they already know everything.
Right, you know? And my God, can I go right there? And which is how I thought of the idea, because I thought, you know, if someone gave me a book and said, oh, I want you to read this, if it were my aunt, I probably would have said, thank you, and then put it in my drawer. If it were my mom, I would have said, no, I'm not going to.
But to have that invitation of, you know, I'm really interested in your perspective on this book. I would really like to know what you I actually had a great conversation with a cousin of mine about that who I hadn't talked to in years, and I had watched the Ken Burns Vietnam documentary series, which just blew me away, and I knew he'd been in Vietnam, and I emailed him and I said, you know, I'm really interested in your perspective on this, and if it reflected your experience. And we ended up having these amazing conversations. So I project if you give that book to your teen nieces and nephews, not from the perspective of this is something you need, but, you know, I'm really interested in your perspective and your, I want to know what you think about this, because how often are teens really asked that?
Right. And, you know, it seems like really that could be kind of the attitude that any practice gift we want to give to someone, especially someone who doesn't consider themselves a practitioner, maybe they don't know anything about practice, maybe, but the fact that it drops in for us, oh, I'd love to share this thing with that person, it seems like the gift can come from that place. And then it is such a gift.
Another fun thing I wanted to share, because it brought back the memory, when I turned 40, I was living at the monastery, and, you know, how do you celebrate in a silent environment? So I was trying to think about, yeah, this is a big birthday, and how do I celebrate? And I really looked at it a long time, and I decided that I wanted to honor people in my life, and I think I ended up picking 40 people, you know, to represent 40, and I sent them all, There's Nothing Wrong With You, as a celebration.
Oh my God.
And just said, I just, you know, you're really important to me in my life. This book and this practice has been really important to me. So I want to thank you, and I want to share a part of my life with you. And sent everybody the book. And it was just, you know, I don't know how, you know, some people felt about it, but it was just, it was such a wonderful way for me to celebrate.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, because, you know, we so often get talked into that place of, well, I don't want to impose on people. I don't want to. But then when we go to our own experience of being given a gift where someone has thought of us, and it doesn't really even matter what the gift is in particular, but when it's given from that place, you know, it's just, it's such a beautiful thing. And gosh, do we hear, especially in a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, story after story after story of, yeah, someone gave me the book. It sat on my shelf for 3 years. And then suddenly one day I just took it off. Or, you know, my cousin had this book that, you know, on her bookshelf. And I just, oh, what's that? Picked it up. And so who knows where those things end up and whose lives they touch.
Yeah, well, as we're talking, I'm realizing it's the how we give the gift, right? Because you were talking about the how of giving your nieces and nephews the There's Nothing Wrong With You for Teens. And the how I gave that book was really more like from this place of, well, wait a minute, why should I get presents for my birthday? I should give them, you know? I should give them as a thank you. So, to me, it didn't really matter what people did with the book. I had just such a wonderful time honoring people in my life like that and saying thank you to them, and then here's a gift I want to give you. But it wasn't from a place of, and you need it, or I want you to read this. It was just, I just want to share a part of myself. So it wasn't like I needed anything from them. You know, I shared it with no expectations.
Wow. And I was just looking at the site today, knowing we were going to talk about this tonight. And it's amazing how many, I mean, boy, Sherry's written a lot of books on a lot of topics. And as she'll often joke, it's all the same thing. But it's so helpful to come at it from so many different directions, especially if, you know, there's someone in our life who is a new parent or, you know, has a particular issue, to be able to kind of find something that might be of particular interest to them.
Yeah, and I actually gave the book Be the Person You Want to Find once to someone, and it didn't land well. They said, "Oh, I can't relate to handwritten books," or something. And I just, to say, it's not always been a positive experience. But so what?
Right.
It's a process. And looking at, for me, what's so fun is to. I mean, like you said, you haven't thought of time out for parents as a shower gift. But what's so fun is to expand. I don't know. I would project that people don't normally think of practice books as gift books, but to think about, how could this be a gift? And how would this, that people might enjoy this? It was really fun to think about that again, because I hadn't recently, and I really so appreciated the invitation to share, because that made me look at it again.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And there were two other things, Anne, that dropped in as you were saying that. So that there's that place, I just, when you said it doesn't always necessarily land well, and I thought, boy, isn't that true of gift giving? Right. But what I often will say to people when I give them anything, but, you know, especially a practice book, is, and it may not resonate for you, and I hope you'll just pass it on to someone that drops in for you who might enjoy it. Right? Because it doesn't, I'm not attached to you loving it. I just want it to be out in the world to find whoever it needs to find. So
yes, and if we're focused on the process, like, you know, I'm just having fun considering these books as gifts and who might I want to give them to, and then not being, like you said, not being attached to them liking it or attached to the outcome, it just is a wonderful adventure.
And then the other thing that dropped in that I hadn't seen before this conversation was, and then the other side of it is, as a practitioner, I can, you know, I often have people who will say, gosh, you know what, Jen, is there something that I can give you? And, you know, I'm sort of racking my brain, right? Because I know how fun it is to give something that someone really wants. But there's that, too, as practitioners, that we can put things on our wish list. You know, I want to go on retreat this year. You could help me do that.
I haven't thought of that one, Jen. That is amazing. I have never thought of practice stuff when people say, what would you like? My goodness. Thank you.
That'd be fun. Help me go on retreat, which is like, help me completely transform my life. Wow, that's the biggest gift
I've been given. Wow, that is really, that's what I love about practice. You know, we get, you know, here we are talking and we're both seeing things we've never seen before. Isn't that cool?
Never. Yeah, after plenty of years between us, we've been practicing a good long time.
That's what makes it exciting. Yeah. It's always alive and new.
It's always alive and new. It is. Well, thank you so much, Anne, for being with us. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Good night.
Okay, you too. Night.
All right, Michael, I'll turn it over to you to start the show.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Anne. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Jen, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Jen.
Thanks, Michael. Nice to be here.
Great. Yes, I loved that conversation also for the same reason that Anne mentioned, that you both thought of new ideas that you'd never thought of before, and we all end up in a fresh and new place. It's great.
I know. It's so fun. You know, we sometimes talk about that group at the monastery. I mean, and it's true with every anytime any of us get together as Sangha, or anytime any of us do anything, really. But so I love that place of we walk into the meditation hall, and none of us has any idea what's going to happen. No idea. And then we all just sit down, and we turn and face this way, and someone puts their hands up and starts talking about something, often something they had no idea they were going to talk about. And then we go from there, and then it's like this whole beautiful piece of art almost is created that none of us knew was going to happen. Amazing.
Yes, yes. And I love that because I can often go around thinking that I do know what's going to happen and I'm going to go here and do this. And and yet when we look at it carefully, we realize that, in fact, no, we don't actually ever know what's going to happen. Yeah. And when I pay attention to that, I can have that experience and life is fresh and new.
That's right. That's right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So keep it simple. I forgot to say the easiest way to get there is to go to the main Living Compassion website. So
okay.
livingcompassion.org. And then there's that beautiful sort of wheel. And I think it's like about like 4 to 6 o'clock on the wheel, I think is the part of the wheel that has the Keep It Simple products. I can't remember what it's called.
Okay.
It's called Keep It Simple. But at any rate, I think it's pretty clear when you get there. And if you press on that part of the wheel, then it takes you to the Keep It Simple website where all the books and recordings and, yeah, lots of really good stuff is there.
Yes, I just found it myself just as you described it. So from that Living Compassion homepage, there's the beautiful wheel there. And you're right, down between 4:30 and 6 p.m. on the clock says the Practice Store.
Perfect. Practice Store. Excellent. Great.
Yes.
Thanks, Michael.
Yes. Great. And shall I jump into announcements?
Yeah.
Okay, great. 'Tis the season to be jolly, and yet it can also be the season of stress. Join Sherry at our new center in the Bay Area on December 3rd for a, quote, time out from stress workshop to explore tips and tools for having a fun and relaxing holiday.
It's such a good point, isn't it? Because it's just such a perfect example of what happens to us as conditioned humans. But I mean, it's the holiday season, right? So in theory, it's, you know, celebration and appreciation and gift giving and gratitude and all those things. And then conditioning takes it and turns it into this very stressful thing that we have to survive, basically, to get through, which is really a metaphor for our whole lives. So to have a workshop to stop, pause, and get to really take it in is another gift.
Yes, it is. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And start the next year with a community of people gathered to practice conscious compassionate awareness at the New Year's retreat, December 27th through January 1st in Menlo Park, California. The retreat features meditation, group discussions, yoga, guidance with Sherry, and free time to spend in nature on the beautiful, spacious grounds.
Can't wait.
Yes. And speaking of the new year, the 2018 schedule is now posted online.
Wow, that's fabulous. So there, see, there you can go and say to your loved ones, here's the retreat I want to go to.
All right. Yes, yes. That was a great idea. I hadn't thought of that before.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Jen today, you can make a show to indicate your desire by pressing star 6 and then 1. A conversation on one topic that lasts about 5 minutes is great. And I see there are many folks who would like to do that, Jen.
Excellent.
All right, you ready to jump in?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Jen and Michael. So great to hear your voices. And
you too. Ditto. It's
been a long time since I called in, but just wanted to say hello and just know that I'm out here listening and practicing, and I wish so much I could be there more or be participating more, but for whatever reasons financially I'm not in that place, but I am just so thankful for all that you guys offer. And I just wanted to call and say hi, and the virtual meditation group, this radio show, the so many things that I can do for free. And from, you know, a remote rural place that I'm at, and it's just, I'm just so appreciative.
You know, that is just so big, isn't it, Chris? I mean, because to be, you know, I happen to be in a rural place as well. It just so happens that it's the hub of practice, so it makes it a little bit easier to stay connected. But it would be so easy. You know, there's so many life circumstances, and that would be one of them, where it would be easy to get talked out of it. You know, I don't have the money right now, so I can't go on retreat, and I can't, you know, maybe sign up for this or sign up for that, and I'm way out here, and so, you know, whatever. But to not get talked into that and to stay plugged in and to listen to the radio show and to do the virtual meditation groups and then to call in and say that you're here, then I'm out here, I'm participating. It's so big.
Yeah, it's the best. And I'm just pleased that it was you, Jen. You know, I just think of you. I spent some time in 2013 as a visiting monk, and it's part of probably some of the greatest time of my life. And I, you know, I'll be in the kitchen and it'll flash on me of how intense and how fun it was, like with Alex cooking and you and just everybody and Sequoia and Sherry, and just it was just wonderful. And and there have been times for sure, many, many months of just going so deep under and not practicing. Yeah. But I'm back and I'm here and I'm on track. And it's like, you know what, now is all that counts and let's go. And I just am so grateful for you. And for Michael, for just every week he's been doing this. I just love you guys, and just wanted to say hi.
Yeah, and you know, Chris, do you do things like record what an amazing hero the practitioner is, and how she's continuing on, and it's just incredible, and all that good stuff?
I've been getting back into recording and listening practice, and And it's very helpful, of course. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. But that's a good incentive, a good reminder that I want to continue that because that helps. You know, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe to as we're starting this new year, there's the calendar published, maybe looking at the calendar and seeing, you know, if it's not an official retreat, is it time for another Visiting Monks Day? You know, is that somewhere in the cards? Is that something that would support the practitioner? Is that, you know, I can't remember, I guess it was on Open Air, that someone was talking recently about that place of where he realized there was just a complete assumption being made. Well, no, you can't go to the monastery. And he had never really stopped to look at it. And as he did and turned to all, yeah, there were reasons and there was this and that. But when he realized that he really wanted to do it and how much it supported him, he began to question some of those things and just to sort of, I can't remember what his words are, but the way I remembered it is kind of invite life to help him line it up. If that was the thing that was going to happen, then I'm open to how things might line up to assist and make that happen.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for saying that. Because in my heart, when I'm here, practice and ending suffering is number one. Above all else, you know, it is.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I just want to support myself. And however it looks, however it turns, I'm having a tough time with career and this and that. But it might be the perfect time. So who knows? But thank you so much. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Lordy knows, you know, no one's been here, you know, looking to get rich. You know,
yeah.
I mean, what, you know, the currency of practice, Chris, is that deepest desire that you're talking about. That is someone who has that as their deepest desire. And do we forget it and do we get talked out of it? Yes. But coming back and touching into that place, that's what makes all of Sangha rich.
Mm. Yeah.
It really does.
Oh, yeah.
So as you look at it, it's not just, you know, there's a way in which it's not just me. I mean, it is me and it's my practice and, you know, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. But to also look at it from that broader perspective of, you know, it's rare that a human being has that as their deepest desire. And so offering oneself to Sangha through the avenue of our own practice is a huge act of generosity, which I think the Visiting Monk Program is one example of that, a tangible manifestation of that.
Amen.
Yeah,
sounds
I know
good.
You've had the experience. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you so much for this time, and I just love hearing your voices, like I said, and
yeah,
I just send
you
all the best wishes, and yeah, keep on keeping on,
yeah.
And all we will too.
Yeah, ditto, and keep calling in, keep talking to us.
Thanks.
We'd love to have the updates. Yeah.
Thanks, and I hope to be at the monastery again soon.
Excellent.
Okay.
We hope to see you. Take good care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, good night.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. Wow, that was inspiring, Jen. Great way
so
to start
inspiring.
The show.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. And it just doesn't it underline so much, Michael, just that place of, you know, we always say it, but that truly everyone's practice is a great act of generosity to all of us.
Yeah, I was just saying that exactly as you were describing that. And when I get bamboozled by conditioning, it can seem that I'm the only one affected by that, but it's not
yeah.
true. Everyone's
mm-hmm.
affected by that. Family,
yep.
Sangha, the clerk
yep.
in the grocery store, everyone.
Yes, everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone. Everyone.
Yeah.
And so I just love that, you know, I'm just calling in to say that I'm here. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, gosh, the voices could just go crazy with that. Well, what do you mean? I mean, who cares? You're going to call in to say you're here, but it's such a tremendous contribution.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And we have another caller here.
All right, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Jennifer from Whidbey Island, Washington.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer.
Wow, I was just making a list of all of the things that I participate in. It's astounding. And it was shocking to me, but I was making the list because I was just making the list to see what's offered, because I'm a person who, due to health physical things, cannot actually go in person to do a retreat or anything like that. And I get pretty ill at times and sometimes in my bed and not getting out much. But I had this experience with you guys that really upped my level of participation. One year, some years ago, I couldn't afford the year-long retreat, and the Sangha comped me on that. And that shocked me so much that I just thought, okay, I better up my level. And so now I do group coaching, reflective listening, open air. I've done awareness coaching, Project Joy, email classes. I'm a monthly donor, which I can, because I came into money after that, got some money, so I had enough to be a monthly donor. And and the year-long retreat and a virtual meditation, I'm just all over it now. And I just have so much gratitude for all of it.
So, Jennifer, that just completely speaks to that image we use so often, doesn't it, of the birds flying in V formation.
Exactly.
Right? Because you were able to, and it was hard. And I'm guessing, you know, other things were difficult in your life, and you've got the health challenges, and you're not able to be here in person. And so there you are, drafting behind Sangha. And as soon as it's the gratitude wants to give, right?
Exactly.
As soon as things start to shift, we're excited to go to the front. We want to be the one to take the wind and to allow other folks who might not be able to. They're tired right now. They need to drop back a little. It's a joy to be able to do that.
Yeah, and now I do, you know, I figured out how to do the bridge walk, and every year I give money to the Africa Project for Christmas presents for people. And so now, you know, money goes both directions. And the bird one, oh, every time I think of that one, I cry, because the year that I heard that on the year-long was the year that that I got comped. And I was telling my husband about that. I was stunned. And he said, well, they're taking care of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's not a practice person at all. He was just like, they're taking care of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So such a gift that, and so important that everyone participates from wherever they are. So not to have an idea that, oh, I need to be, you know, right up there in the front in order to participate. Well, not at all. Because how often do we see things and receive the gift of someone's courage and insight when they're, quote, struggling?
So many times for me.
Yeah.
When I hear the people who are, you know, can't get out of their bed, or, you know, what do they have going on?
Exactly.
And I'd also love to encourage everybody who has a physically able body to go to do the retreats and the visiting monks, and don't get talked out of it because of some other reason that's malleable, because I benefit from hearing people's experiences when they go to the monastery.
Yep. We're doing it for you. Yep.
Exactly.
If we're all one, then when one of us is on retreat, we're all on retreat.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jennifer. And wow, another one. I got the tissues out over here. These people are inspiring me.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
And we have another caller here.
All right, very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, it's Jeff from Austin.
It's Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I just spontaneously think I'm going to call in because conditioning wants me to keep working, and I said I was going to stop at 8 and take a break, and I had a little reminder that open air was happening.
Wow,
so,
that's huge right
yeah.
there, huh?
Yeah, well, and as I was like, okay, I'm going to call in, I could hear, like, sort of the voices ramp up, you don't need it, you could do something else, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, that means I got to do it.
So. Yeah, exactly. Because, it's that thing Sherry's been talking about so much lately, because it dropped in to do it. And then the voice comes in to try to talk you out of it. And then, you know, much to its chagrin, we use that as our flag of, oh, well, then it's definitely time to call in. Thank you for your prodding.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for underscoring
that. And even that piece, Jess, I don't know if you're anything like many of us, setting an alarm to stop and take a break, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And then paying attention to it when it happens instead of, oh, no, I wasn't where I thought it would be. And, you know, let me just finish this one. Yeah.
Totally. Right, and I often don't. And tonight, this was up. It came up on my screen. It was like, earlier, I was like, I set a goal for myself. I'm going to do 1 hour of work, and I'm going to take time off for myself. And so it just came at that moment, like, open air, 8 o'clock. And I was like, oh, there's a thing I can do for myself. Yeah. And as soon as I wanted to just do that thing, and it's like, maybe not. Do something else. That's not the right thing. You should do something else.
Right. Yeah.
So it's been interesting. I am in the midst of a job transition after 8 years in city government, and I had, I'm just listening to the calls and listening to sort of your comment about the holiday stress, and, you know, all of them are resonating, the gratitude for practice and, like, how the mind works. And I had this moment in my reflective listening buddy's call last night as I was sharing that I've been having this sort of angst of and resistance around telling people that I'm about to embark on this really exciting journey that I'm super excited about, but I've been feeling all this, like, I don't want to tell. And as I was sharing this on the call with my buddy, it just sort of dropped in that it was because there was all these sort of rules from conditioning about how and when and who I should tell, and projecting all these things on when I should tell people and how they would handle it and how they were going to respond. And it was just feeling like really serious and boring and adult and not fun and stressful. And I had this moment like, wait, this is really fun and exciting. And also it's kind of, it's like, conditioning makes it a big deal, but it's also, like, not a big deal. I'm doing this thing, and I'm excited about it.
Yep. Yes. God. Isn't that so what it does? So there's this thing that I'm really excited about. I'm really happy to be doing it. And then conditioning wants to make it very serious, and you've got to tell people in the right way and figure out this and da, da, da. And before you realize it, you don't want to. You don't want to talk about it. You don't want to deal with it. You don't want to. And it's taken this thing that you're completely lit up about and made it something that you don't want to deal with.
Yep. Yeah. So this really, and it, you know, the other layer of it was that there was also the element of, like, you have to figure out why you don't, there's something wrong that you don't want to say it. And it's like, well, that just keeps you from actually figuring it out. There's anything to figure out, but it's just like another layer of the bamboozle. And so it just felt good to again, see its sort of sneaky ways.
Well, you know what's funny, too, is that from what you laid out, you sort of did figure out why. Why don't I want to tell
people?
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, the reason I don't want to tell people is there's this tedious conversation happening inside my head.
Exactly.
With all these predictions of how it's going to go, and, you know, I got to do it just right, and, ugh.
Right. Yeah, ugh, is exactly it. So it just, and so I've just had this, you know, gratitude, and then I've been working with my coach, or through my coaching calls, just really focusing on a lot of recordings about how I want to be during this time rather than like what I'm going to be doing, which is, of course, where ego wants to go. And so just lots of gratitude for all of the practice opportunities we have with Sangha, which just helps stay in touch with what feels good and to have those moments of, you know, to have like a safety net to turn to when it's hard and those gentle reminders and ways that we can, with each other through Sangha or on our own through the practice tools, be continually reminded about the choices that we have, which light or dark, where do we want to be?
Yes, the choices that we have. Yeah, well put. And I'm curious if through, you know, 200 recordings or looking at it with your coach or that sort of thing, do you feel like you've gotten sort of a look at what is going on around you, what she's told is going to happen if she doesn't tell people just right, or the reactions people are going to have, or that sort of thing?
Yeah, I haven't explored it through 200 recordings, though that is a great idea. Because what I noticed last night is that there's this element of like a part of me, or you can't tell if it's a subpersonality or ego, just like kind of bracing myself as I go to tell, or like preparing for what that part of me thinks they're going to respond. It's been good to see that. And what I have been practicing very actively throughout is, you know, the kind of like fake it till you make it. Like I know deep within, as much as anyone can know, that I am excited for this and grateful and fulfilled from what I've had. And so I'm going to communicate that even if I'm partially identified or bracing for this other stuff. I'm going to approach that as like, hey, I have some exciting news for you. And that's been a really cool and fun thing to practice, that like even in the moment, if I've got all these layers and conditioning's got a little grip on me, I'm gonna like, because it's not really faking it, like I know I'm excited about this and I know I'm lit up, so even if I don't feel lit up in the moment, that's what I'm gonna communicate. Hey, I'm excited, I got this thing I want to tell you about.
Yes, you know, and it reminds me, Jess, of you're talking of that place that we sometimes talk about in practice where so much suffering happens because one way we say it is we send the wrong person in for the job. So in this case, right, if you're going to be talking to someone, telling someone about this next part of your life and, you know, the adventure, if we send in the person who's, I have no idea what the sort of language would be for you around it, but isn't sure about it or insecure or worried what other people will think or concerned about their reactions, then she's going to very likely get squashed.
Right.
You know, there's probably only a very narrow, you know, reaction that someone could have that would have to be just right in order for her to feel the way she's trying to feel in that situation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and actually, yeah, totally, 100%. And as you say that, what dropped in is that one of the things I've been aware of in terms of exploring, like, what that is I think there's a sense of, like, letting people down that I'm leaving or that in being excited for this, it's like conditioning making this duality as it does, that in being excited for this new thing, somehow that must mean something bad is there with what I have now, which is not the case. And so that piece, it's like, I think internally and externally, me and my boss have been so intertwined and there's beliefs and so there's this aspect of like, can we be, you know, so something must be wrong, but that's not the case. And so it's like an ego or a part of me is prepared, is not wanting anyone to get that message because it's not how I feel. But if I go into it worrying about that and communicate from that, that's the message they're going to get. Something's wrong. And
exactly.
I'm worried about it.
Oh, well put. Oh, my gosh. So what happens is exactly the thing supposedly we're avoiding happening, right?
Right.
Yeah, Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gosh, you're making such a commercial for really looking at beliefs and assumptions, because mm-hmm. all of those things that go unquestioned and really unseen under the radar screen that are completely controlling our behavior, but we're not seeing it. You know, it's back to what you said a few minutes ago that was so powerful, is keep reminding ourselves that there is a choice, but there's only mm-hmm. a choice once it comes up to the surface and we see it that way. And so I think that's another place recording and listening around it can be so helpful, especially that two-handed recording place where when the recorder's in the right hand, in this case she, gets to say anything she wants to say about it, anything that's going on mm-hmm. for her. Like, she doesn't have to be the practitioner, and she doesn't have to have it all mm-hmm. figured out, and she doesn't have to be articulate, and she can just talk. And what's so helpful about that is that then, what, at least in my experience, when we listen to that from the left hand, all of those beliefs and assumptions are revealed in that. Mm-hmm. She'll tell them to us without even realizing that's what she's doing. She'll actually yeah. tell us what's actually going on if we're listening mm-hmm. from that compassionate place. Yeah.
Yes, that's been my experience with it too. So I appreciate the remind. I think often I've turned to it when I'm like often in despair or part of me
right.
in despair. And so I'm not quite there yet, but it's a good reminder that it's a wonderful tool in yeah. any moment. And so
in any moment.
I'm excited.
Right, because
so
it can
yeah.
just be like, hey, team, you know what? I just realized that I'm having some hesitation about telling people about this thing, even though I'm excited about it, and I'm
right.
and I'm kind of scratching my head over that, and, you know,
yeah.
just whatever comes out, and then to just kind of see what the mentor might say about it. Because
mm-hmm.
then that really ups our chances that, you know, going back to hopefully sending the right person in for the job, who we want to send in really in all interactions in our lives, is the
mm-hmm.
grown-up. The grown-up
yep.
who knows she's complete, her goodness is established, she's a good person, she's doing good things, she's doing the best she can all the time. You know, human interactions can be hard, they can be everything, they can be fabulous, you know, all those things, but
mm-hmm.
we're not leaving sort of a young person or an identity who has no interest in our best interest to have the interaction.
Right. Right. And that the person we want to go into it is the person who wants to enjoy whatever is there. Like find
That's
some
right.
enjoyment in it. You know, and enjoy
right.
can get be a tricky word, but that like, oh no, that holidays, work, all of these things can actually be enjoyable if we're coming
That's
from
right.
that place.
That's right. Exactly.
So,
it goes back to, you know, Michael's announcement of the workshop where what a bummer, really. That I mean, here's the holiday season. Well, then let's celebrate. You know, let's do what supposedly the holidays are for. Get together with people I love, you know, have festivities, care, I mean, be interested. You know, it's such a perfect example of the talking about your interactions with your boss. You care about that person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you care. And so you're told, you know, your excitement about this next thing is has some indication of that relationship. And what you realize is it doesn't. And so to come
right.
from that, to be freed up, to come from that place of caring is
mm-hmm.
really amazing.
It's huge. Yeah. So much gratitude for all the practice opportunities
yeah.
for all Sangha. As a
yeah.
practitioner who keeps showing up.
Exactly. Yes. And shows up to the radio show and gives all of us, you know, another angle to look at all of it from. So thanks for that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, Jess.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jessica. And Jen, it sounds like tonight we are celebrating the practitioner who keeps showing up.
I guess so. That must be what's going on for this person.
Yes, we're all showing up here, all of us callers and listeners and participants.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
And Jen, we're going to hear from our coaching program now, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
Okay, sounds good.
Having emptied our teacups in 2016, we are now embodying joy in 2017. Joy is our experience of presence. Zen Awareness Coaching is a great way to support ourselves as we embark on projecting joy. Through weekly calls, email check-ins, and focused practice commitments, we are assisted to see how we are caused to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering. Zen Awareness Coaches are trained and guided by Sherry Huber. They offer coaching as a way to deepen their own practice and support the monastery. We recommend coaching for people who have attended retreats with us, have some grounding in the principles and language of this practice, and are interested in deepening their awareness practice. To request a Zen Awareness Coach, email zenawarenesscoaches@livingcompassion.org. Make 2017 a year of great love and joy.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Jen, we have more callers here.
All right, very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Drew from Chicago.
Drew,
hey. Drew.
Hey.
Hi. This is interesting because I'll be the first caller that sort of I guess I'm showing up, so that's a good thing, but it's the first time I'm calling in, actually, when I'm identified with somebody who really doesn't have a lot of interest in doing practice right now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
I'm taking the class, the current class on undulations, and
okay.
I've been sort of looking at this in my life, and I called in a couple of months ago and talked to Sherry about when I was involved in a cult, and I grew up in a very strict fundamentalist religion.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just decided in these past months that because my undulations are sort of so extreme, I used to call it being backslidden when I was a Christian, when I was a kid. And backslidden is what we called it, yeah. And I think
like sliding back.
Sliding back, yeah. So,
okay, gotcha.
So you were either, you know, with the Lord or you were not.
Oh,
and when you weren't, you were backslidden. And it was always sort of an all or nothing sort
yeah.
of deal. You're
yeah.
either going to church and praying and doing all the right things, or you're, you know, if you're not, and it always, you know, it would take one quote unquote sin on my part to sort of take me out of God's good graces, and I'd be back in hell again. So it's so interesting that 40 years later, I've carried a lot of that with me into this practice, and it continues, not nearly as extreme, but definitely there.
Well, you know what's amazing, Drew, about you calling in and doing the email class right now is that I think one of the things that makes it so tricky in really exploring the whole cycle of an undulation is for exactly what you lay out, is that when we're in that place where I don't really particularly have any interest in practicing, then we're not able to look at it. So that piece, that very important piece of the puzzle doesn't really get a lot of awareness. So it's really kind of something of a miracle that you're able to show up and do these practice things from that place.
Yeah. Well, there's been sort of a vision of, okay, this can't be quite where I need to be.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like going back and forth, and there's got to be a more intelligent sort of like from both sides. And what I'm seeing is that it's so much more gray on both sides. You know, there's who has been showing up to practice, the good boy, the person who is on. I'm starting to look at it, it's like, wow, I wonder what, there's a lot of motivation there that I am starting to question.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always sort of been able to be the star, you know, to,
mm-hmm.
to be the,
mm-hmm.
and so it's, yeah, it's really interesting and great to see.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
And I'm seeing how like all of me was not showing up to practice. I mean,
yes.
it was just,
yes.
it was another condition. I mean, there was definitely, you know, good things were happening and,
yep.
and there's
yep.
a lot of growth and awareness and all that, but there was a lot of attachment to some conditioned parts that,
So a couple of things pop in for me as you're describing it, Drew. One is that it sounds like what you're describing is a process of your practice maturing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That there's a maturity that's coming to it. And also that place of that we'll talk about, you know, there are parts of us who are kept out of the circle of acceptance is one way we sometimes talk about it, because they're just the wrong person. He's just not,
yes.
like, you know, you're talking about in the backslidden place. I'm guessing that what came with that is you're bad. I mean,
yep.
if you're in that place, you're bad. You are wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just, you're far from the Lord, but you're the wrong person that
right.
you've fallen out of, right? So he's way probably normally outside the circle of acceptance. And so
yeah.
as our practice matures, what can begin to happen, and I don't literally mean this, but the image I always have of it is those parts of us sort of peeking around the corner and looking and seeing, wow, there might actually be a place for me now. Like there's enough space there. There's enough strength there that I might actually be able to be seen. And so then what can happen is our practice begins to expand enough that we're not practicing only when, I feel great and, you know, all the lights are on and, you know, I call in and it's fabulous. But we're beginning to be able to practice, even though, you know, sometimes it's a little bit like a toddler where it doesn't feel completely stable. We're beginning to practice through all of it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. 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 And I'm looking at also, no wonder there's resistance when,
yeah.
you know, this guy kind of gets just thrown to the curb because he doesn't
yeah.
fit in with somebody else's idea of what practice looks like.
Exactly.
And so it's not a very kind, environment.
No, it isn't. It isn't. Are you familiar? I think I've used it once already tonight. But are you familiar with that phrase Sherry will often use of your goodness is already established?
I have heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just occurs to me that could be a really helpful place to practice with in terms of, okay, we know this is a really good guy, a really good human. And, you know, we can set aside all that. Yeah, but I mean, sometimes he and he this and sometimes that and he doesn't. And yeah, I know. But here's what I know. He's a really good person. So given that there's nothing wrong with him, if we start there, now what? Right? What else might be going on? And that's where, you know, we're back to the two-handed recording. That's where we can really begin to put the recorder in the right hand and let that guy who is having whatever's going on with him go on with him without the assumption, without him being afraid that someone's going to come to the conclusion that there is something wrong with him, because we've already established that isn't the answer. That's never, ever going to be the answer.
Yeah.
So then that gives him the space to just tell me everything that's going on. Let's just look at it.
Yeah, that's interesting because I haven't had much success with the right hand, left hand, and now I can see why. It's like I'm getting an image. I'm getting an image of a kid, maybe a teenager, like going into therapy and a therapist,
yeah.
you know, trying to get him to talk to his father or something. And it's
yeah.
like, you know,
yeah.
you have all this chaos going on at home, and it's,
yeah.
like, why would he talk? Why would there be communication or vulnerability in a place where he's just going to get shut down? And
yeah, no way. No way.
Yeah.
And I'm right
yeah.
with you, Drew. You know, for me, there was a lot of here's the other image that comes in for me around that is of an injured animal, or especially an animal like a, you know, rescue animal from a shelter, where they may have had a lot of hard stuff happen before. And I could be absolutely completely loving and coming from a good place, but it might take a little bit of time for that creature to trust that I really mean it. I really mean it. I really want to hear whatever you have to say. And I'm never, ever going to think that it means that there's something wrong with you. And you might have to keep telling him that over and over and over and just giving him all the time and the patience, because even that process is a communication to him of how important he is and how much you get it, that there's nothing wrong with him. And that when he's ready, he'll begin to tell you what's going on with him.
Fortunately, right now I have 5 pounds of rescue chihuahua on my lap to teach me just that.
Perfect. No wonder that image dropped in for me.
and it has been the perfect, sort of projection to have that sort of voice with myself, to have that sort of, and the key for me is to be, you know, this is one where I need to write notes all over the house. To not get caught up in I'm bad, you know, or he's bad, or what that part is bad.
So Drew, the chihuahua, is it he or she?
I have both, but my he is the one who's really sort of special needs.
Okay.
The male.
So use that to great advantage. That to me is such a doorway in, because you would never give him that message.
Right.
Right? You would only ever want him to know that whatever goes on with him is completely all right, and probably some hard stuff goes on with him. And he might even do stuff that, I mean, he's a chihuahua, right? So how bad can it get, right? But, you know, okay, let's take a Great Dane, right, who's had a hard, and, you know, rips up the couch or,
right,
you know, nips at the neighbor or whatever it is, might do stuff that we could say, oh, gosh, I wish he didn't do that. But that's not the same as, I think he's a bad dog, and I think there's something wrong with him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if I can find the love for myself that I have for him and patience and compassion, then I'm good. So.
Yeah. And that is where projection works in our favor so much, because you do have the love for him, for Drew, that you have for that dog, because there's no way you could have it for that dog if you didn't have it for Drew. That's the same source.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, just that the last piece is so important for us to, you know, not entertain any assessments of where we are in practice, because it would want to say, well, I'm not really, and yet it's very clear what a depth of practice is happening for you right now.
Yeah.
And that it's just, it's different. It's back to the maturity, you know, that you're getting to those places where it feels hard. It isn't all, quote, up. And yet, boy, these can be some of the most powerful times that we practice through.
Right.
Yes, please.
So much more expansive and real than
that sort of
puritanical practice that some part of me thinks is,
you
know, or projects on practice and all you folks out there. And
And it's back to our theme, as Michael said, of the evening, which is that it's why it's so important and such a gift that people call in from wherever they are in practice. Because if we didn't call in a situation like you're in right now and talk about what's going on with us, then we all would get to that place of like, well, gosh, we're not really talking about everything that goes on here. What are we doing here? But when someone calls in and talks about what's going on with them in a, quote, hard place, then we get to see, well, practice is everything. It's not just over here on the one side of the duality.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That's amazing.
It's amazing. Thank you. Deep, deep gratitude for calling in tonight, Drew.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks,
okay.
Michael.
You're welcome.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Drew. Jen, I am running out of superlatives here on this end of the phone. Quite an amazing conversation for me.
Yeah, me too. Gosh, it's just, it's amazing what we're doing here together.
Yes, it is. And I really appreciated what you were saying about those parts of us who have been kept out of the circle of acceptance.
Yeah.
And how critical it is to see that process for what it is and what it's holding in place and what's possible when everything is allowed to be as it is and there is nothing wrong and I'm fine and there's no big scary monster hiding
that's
under
right.
the bed or hiding anywhere else.
That's right.
It's all made up by conditioning.
Yeah. In fact, as I think Drew illustrated for us so beautifully, much of the richness of our lives lives in that box that conditioning labels danger. Don't go here. Terrible, awful, bad person. You know, being the good right practitioner is a really effective way conditioning can hide out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And we have time for at least one more call here, Jen.
Okay, very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, this is Anna from Seattle.
Hey, Anna.
Hi,
how
Anna.
Are you?
Hi, I'm good. Wow, I'm excited to get on. And talk with you. I'm really excited to be coming to the New Year's retreat, and I really didn't have the money at all at the time, but I was thinking for 1 or 2 months, oh, I really want to go.
Mm-hmm.
I need to go.
right. I really need to go.
And then I flipped the coin and... Yeah, so I just signed up on credit card, and then within 1 week, or actually within 2 days, somehow I got the money coming in. So it's already covered. It's as if I, you know, wouldn't have had to pay for it or something.
That is so, that's a great story. It reminds me of, Sherry will often use the image from Indiana Jones. Actually, I haven't even seen it myself, but where he's taking a step off a precipice, and there's nothing there. There's nowhere to put his foot. But it's almost like he had to put his foot out first in order for the thing to then be under it to support his foot. It couldn't have gone the other way. So it's like life was inviting you to sign up first, and then the money came. I love it. That is a great, great story.
And otherwise, I'm just practicing really to turn my attention. It seems impossible sometimes.
It does. And it seems, isn't it sort of that, gosh, this doesn't seem like rocket science, right? It's not like I'm trying to stand on my head and do a backflip, and yet it's incredibly challenging.
Yeah. For example, the other night, I was just laying in bed and looking out the window, and then there's a raccoon staring inside of my window.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I closed the curtain because I was kind of scared. Mm-hmm. And, 10 minutes later, I look again at the raccoon is still standing there staring. And then I just went back, I don't know, I looked up symbolism. What does it mean when a raccoon
standing vigil at your window?
It's about letting go of old patterns or of negativity.
Oh,
and
wow.
Things like that.
Wow.
I was just trying to forget. The raccoon was really cute, but I was a little bit worried that it would, you know, want to jump inside of the window or something, and the window is kind of thin. So I was worried it would come in. But I tried to go to sleep, but, wow, it was so, because I was so anxious about it, I couldn't turn my attention to something else. But eventually I fell asleep, but, I wasn't sure how to turn my attention. I was just trying to listen. I was just listening, you know, to podcasts or things. My physical sensations were,
were strong.
What?
They were strong. The physical sensations were strong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. So there was that.
Eventually.
It worked eventually that you fell asleep, in other words.
Yeah, I don't know how. Yeah, I don't know how it worked.
Right. Well, and it's such an interesting place, Anna. You know, there are a couple different things that drop in for me about it when you're talking. One is that place, it's a little bit back to what we were looking at with Drew, where there's such a patience, isn't there, that's required in practice. That so here's this thing and my attention is on this thing and I'm wanting to turn my attention away from it, and so I'm listening to podcasts and I'm, you know, doing different stuff and the attention just keeps getting pulled there. And so there's a way in which that can, at least for me, sort of inspire something of a respect for what we're up against, sort of in that way that I think Gandhi talked about the worthy opponent. Like, wow, we're up against a very strong force here. This is not, it seems like it should be simple and straightforward, but it's actually not. Well, it is straightforward. It is simple, but it's not necessarily easy to do. And so for me, that can really inspire not expecting that it's going to work immediately. You know, it's like I decide to get into physical shape. Well, that takes some time. That takes practice, right?
Yeah.
And then the other piece of it that can be, you know, sometimes a fun thing to play with is that so there's something that conditioning wants us to turn our attention away from, and we practice turning right towards it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, we practice, okay. Yeah.
So in this case, and it's, you know, it's one of those, you got to kind of pay attention and see, you know, where you are and what feels compassionate and all those things. But what made me think of it was you made that comment that it was kind of cute, you know?
Yeah, it was just a raccoon, you know?
It's a raccoon. And so, you know, could the mentor kind of hold her hand metaphorically and kind of say, do you want to just look at it? You know, we could just peek through the curtain and just kind of see, just look at it, right? Because, again, it's back to what I think Michael was saying was we get talked into there, these big, scary monsters, and, you know, I got to turn my attention away from them. But meanwhile, when we really start to realize that often as I, quote, turn my attention away from it, there's a conversation in my head that's saying, but it's not working. I'm still thinking about it. Are you thinking about it? No, I'm not thinking about it. Yeah. Oh, gosh, you're still thinking about it. Why am I thinking about it? Right? So it makes it very, very challenging. So it can also be quite powerful to turn straight to it and to say, all right, hairy monster, let's see what you've got.
So several opportunities like that where I felt like I have to turn my attention to something else, you know, because I thought if I focus on the raccoon too much, then it's really, you know, it's going to feel that and it's really going to jump through the window. And some other things happen too where I really need to turn my attention, which are great opportunities because I certainly haven't learned how to turn my attention when it's not necessary, you know, when it's, like just in meditation or something, I haven't, you know, it's really challenging for me to turn my attention. So it's good I'm getting some more other situations where I really have to, like, for example, a sleep study, I was getting done going to a sleep study, and for 4 hours I couldn't fall asleep, but I had to go to sleep because I certainly didn't want to do the sleep study again with all the monitors and camera and wow. So yeah, those kinds of opportunities are really helpful. I think so in that in less important, well, it's not less important, but in easier situations
when the stakes aren't quite so high.
I will be able to use that eventually to, you know, be present all the time.
Yeah. Well, gosh, you know, it's fortunately we're right at the top of the hour, Anna, because you're bringing up some really quite subtle things that I actually would. I hope you'll call back in and talk to Sherry about it, because some of the things you're talking about are very, very subtle and interesting points that I think we could all really benefit from exploring some more. Because I think what you're looking at is, when I'm turning the attention, what am I turning it towards? Because I think that's one of the things that, you know, especially Ashwini often talks about this, is that place of ego talking to ego, right? Oh, I've got to turn my attention away from this because, you know, if I don't, the raccoon's going to come through the thing. Well, but I mean, you're not turning your attention. Why can't you turn your attention away? But I need to turn my attention away, right? And so it can feel like I'm attempting to train the attention, but sometimes what's going on is that there's a conversation that's where sort of ego is talking to ego in there. And so I love the thing you talked about in terms of listening to something like a podcast, where I know for myself, I'll do something like, let's say I'm listening back to a recording that I made, and I play this little game of really listening. And then I realize the attention has wandered, and so I go back to the beginning of the recording, and I really listen. And the, you know, the whatever the content of the recording is not the point, but it's literally sort of the calisthenics, if you will, of training the attention to be on what I'm hearing instead of on that conversation that you're describing so well. So I hope to be continued. I hope, you know, keep looking at it, you know, seeing what you see about it. I hope you will call in, because I would be fascinated to hear Sherry's take on it as well.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in, Anna.
Bye.
Take care. And I love that piece of the symbolism of the letting go of old negativity. I would go with that one. That seems like the...
Yeah.
That is a gift. That
would be big. That would be very good.
Love it. All right.
Bye.
Take care, Anna. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. And Jen, I don't know how it happens, but it seems that the current open air is always the best one ever. Kind of like the latest retreat.
Female classes. Exactly.
An Africa trip.
Yeah, and Africa trips and blogs and that sort of thing. Must be something, I think it's something to do with being present, Michael, I think
you're onto something there.
Yeah.
And it's been a great pleasure to have you with us tonight, Jen. So thank you for that.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Good night.
Take care. Good night.